Welcome to episode 45. This week, I'm joined by Sharon Jamieson. Sharon is a life strategist, author, minister, entrepreneur, and corporate leader. She believes that we're often more powerful than we know, and that there's great power in our purpose and its ability to help us cultivate our unique gifts, access our inner wisdom, and be inspired into action. In this week's episode, we discuss everything from the need for emotional and spiritual stamina, to normalizing failure, to knowing and understanding yourself well enough to be able to distinguish your friends between those in your inner core, your inner circle, or your crowd. She reminds us of the importance of doing the inner work so we can rise above the expectations of us and or any conditioning to make the journey back to who we truly are. Welcome, Sharon.
Welcome. I am so grateful to be here with you today. So thanks so much for giving me an opportunity to share.
Oh, you're so welcome. You know, I'm really excited to have you on the show. And, you know, before I start asking you my questions, I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I would say something that I'm most proud of is that I'm a mom. Of a 27-year-old son. I am also an author, speaker, a minister, a corporate leader in the pharmaceutical industry for almost 36 years. But also, I'm a person who's committed to justice and equity and diversity and empathy. And those are the qualities that really drive everything I do in the world. So I'm excited about all the ways that I can show up as a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And all the ways that I have an opportunity to express different parts of me. And I'm grateful to share that with you today.
You know, and justice, diversity, equality, inclusion, all of that has always been important. It's not that it hasn't been important, but it has certainly taken a different tone in the last few years, don't you think? Or has it become more to the forefront? What are your thoughts on that?
Good question. When I think about diversity and equity and justice, I think it was always important. Mm-hmm. I think it's becoming more in the forefront because we haven't done a good job as a culture of embracing it. It's one thing to have declaration. It's another thing to have demonstration. And so I think that America, we don't practice what we preach. Mm-hmm. And so we see that people are being injured, not only physically, but emotionally, spiritually, mm-hmm. Intellectually, financially, politically. And so I think we are at this precipice where we have to push back. But those principles were always my principles. I learned them growing up from my father. I'm also a preacher's kid. Mm-hmm. And so I always infused Jesus with justice. Mm-hmm. And I never separated them. So I always knew that to preach the word of God meant that I also had to take care of the needs of the people. And so that means politics. It means finances. It means education. So mm-hmm. I always combine those two in a way that felt purposeful and meaningful as far as my purpose was concerned.
Okay. So I think we've already hit on it, but my first question was going to be, what is it that drives you? Is there anything you want to add to that? You've already started telling us. What drives you?
Yeah. What drives me is helping people be who they were born to be and not settle. And because settling never brings satisfaction and settling Absolutely. Never brings fulfillment. And when I think about people settling for being less than they were born to be, not only do they suffer, but society suffers because we all bring a unique piece of this collective puzzle. So if I don't do what I have been called to do and somebody else doesn't do what they have been called to do, we miss out, not only individually and collectively. And I believe that if all of us were being and doing what we were created to be, a lot of these problems that we have in the world would be eradicated. problems like hunger and climate issues, issues around peace and justice and empathy, hunger. I think if people were courageous enough to be who they were born to be, I think the life would be different. The world would be different. Society would be different. So I'm passionate about that because when we live at a fraction of who we are, we can never be fruitful. And that's important, fruitful. Yeah.
You know, that's such an awesome place to start because often, you know, sometimes we settle and we settle for, okay, well, that's enough, or I've done enough, or I've given enough of myself. And we don't always look at the fact that we're also shortchanging the collective, like you said, right? Of what we could be giving to, of the impact on the environment or the different spaces in which you are.
Yeah, I think it's when we realize that we are settling. And that's the hard part. Sometimes we don't realize that we're settling because we have normalized mediocrity. Society has encouraged us and socialized us and theologized us to be puppets and parrots and not purposeful. And so if you don't know that you have normalized mediocrity, you won't stretch.
How does one find out if they've normalized mediocrity, do you think?
That's a good question. I think we all always know internally where there's more. We always have a sense that we are not functioning. Yes. And it shows up in our prayer life. Mm-hmm. It shows up in our addictions. Because remember, anytime you have to numb, you know that there's more. And so you look at people who are using food and alcohol and other pathological means is because they know that something is lacking. There's a hunger and a thirst for more. And so when we're hungry and thirsty, we will eat poison. And so that's how I know that there is more. But also, I also believe we know that there's more because when we came to the world, we knew it. I remember as a child, mm-hmm. I remember being 3 and 4 years old and feeling a spirit. I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I grew up in a home that supported me and would tell me when I said, you know what, I feel the spirit. My father would say, go talk to back to the spirit and see what God is saying. Mm-hmm. So I always knew that there was a higher force. There was something else guiding me. Now, mm-hmm. what happens if you're not raised in that type of environment and you come back and you're 4 and 5 and say, you know what, I feel the spirit. Somebody will say, you're crazy, you're dumb, you're stupid, you shut it down. But we're most sensitive to the spirit when we're young, or sometimes people call it intuition, our inner witness, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But what mm-hmm. happens is we get socialized out of that. We get taught to believe logic and not the spirit, which is very patriarchal, it's very Eurocentric, it's not African. Mm-hmm. So we got to be careful to understand the ways we have been colonized and conditioned and theologized out of our strengths, out of our skills, out of our awareness, out of our knowing, that inner knowing that allows you to be courageous and to follow your conscience and not the crowd. You can only follow your conscience and not the crowd.
That's hard sometimes. It is hard sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's hard, absolutely. But I think we have to normalize struggle. When I think about how we were raised, I was born in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I understood that success also meant struggle. Yeah. But I feel like some of the younger generations, they have been pacified. And so they don't want to sweat. They don't want to struggle. They want microwave blessings, you know? As a result, they don't have any emotional and spiritual stamina to stick and stay. So they want mountains, but no valleys, you know?
Yeah. And I think there's a sense that once you're feeling discomfort, that you got to let it go. But discomfort is part of the process.
Yes. And our generation, we used to feel that when you feel discomfort, you got to lean into it. Because I always associated discomfort with development. Mm-hmm. And so and part of that was because I was an athlete, one. I played basketball, but also I played the piano. So my parents make sure we all played one sport and one instrument. Because it teaches you discipline. And I don't see a lot of people being able to be committed to something, even when they don't see results. I think sometimes we have to normalize failure. Mm-hmm. because I feel that in life, you have a good result, which is a good outcome. That's great. But sometimes you have a good lesson, which is called failure. And so I think there's an opportunity for us to normalize success and failure without the stigma. But we stigmatize failure because we want to be on social media with all the bling, bling, bling. You know, we want to dazzle people. Yeah. But I feel like I don't want sizzle. I want substance. And that's the problem. A lot of people have a lot of sizzle with no substance. And that's why they don't have staying power.
Right. Now, you know, you've been a first in a number of spheres that you've been in, right? And, you know, I want to hear about that. But I also want to hear, as you're explaining what that was like for you, can you share with listeners what comes with being part of first? Because first sounds very glamorous and, you know, it's the spot to be, but there's a lot of pressures that come with being first.
Oh my, that is an understatement. In America, we say being the first, the few, and the only are challenging. I would say when I entered the pharmaceutical industry in the mid 80s, I was the first for a long time. And well, in a lot of spheres, I'm still the first and only. And I have to say, fairly or unfairly, there's a lot of pressure because I realized that I would become the standard. I would become the example, the ruler, the substratum where everybody else is judged. And I know that if people don't have a good experience with me, it can affect generations to come. So I do feel pressure. I do feel a sense of responsibility also. And sometimes when it gets hard to always challenge stereotypes, always deal with stigmas, always challenge the labels, always being the Black person expert, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Sometimes that feels heavy because many times the dominant group is very unaware of how racist that they are. They really don't get how they have inculcated this spirit of supremacy and how it affects everything that they do. And I can tell you it's fatiguing sometimes, but what helps me stay faithful is I remember my ancestors who had to endure so much more than I had. People who had to make a living on broken pieces. And so when I am sad, I remember that I step on their shoulders.
Yeah.
And it encouraged me. Yeah. So I can, you know, step, you know, hopefully be a good stepping stone for others. But to do that, this is what I will encourage women to do, is to get a support system. It's lonely at the top. And sometimes you have to find other women of color, especially Black women who are in the same environment. Because I found out not only was it isolating to be the first and the few and the only in the corporate setting, but it was also lonely because I was at a place that many of my friends and church members didn't understand. So it's hard to understand people to feel sorry for me, and I'm walking around with a company car and a big house, and people are not, I felt that my people were not always supportive, that there was a lot of envy because they saw the outside, but they didn't understand the emotional, spiritual price that I was paying.
Yeah. So it really is important to find a circle where people are experiencing similar things. So you can have those sounding boards and just that I know what you're going through and I feel it, even if it doesn't come with advice at all times. And maybe advice isn't what's always needed, but just I'm in it with you.
Yes, I'm in it with you. And I think advice is important. I believe that collective wisdom always wins. And since so many of us are the first, we don't have that well of experience to pull back from, to draw from. So sometimes it's good to get your three and four sisters on the phone and say, this is what I'm experiencing. What do you see that I am missing? And how would you navigate this as a Black woman? Many of my friends who are in these roles, because I'm a director in a pharmaceutical company, we get together and we share and we give each other advice because a lot of times we're the only one. And we find that it's really interesting, even though that a lot of companies are being more open to women, you find that many white women are not as open or supportive of Black women or women of color. So sometimes the women of color, we get together and we kind of piecemeal great wisdom to help each other, not only to get to rise up the corporate ladder, but to keep us there in one piece, to keep us there so we stay healthy, happy, and whole. Because in my with my clients, I feel like I deal with a lot of high power women that they don't share because there's a lot of shame. And so they get to these positions and they feel like I should know it all. I don't want people to see me sweat, or the whole entire family is dependent on them financially. And sometimes they won't say, I want to quit. It's too much. This is but emotionally taxing. I'm draining. I'm tired of dealing with microaggressions and microassaults and code switching and you know, bias and all those types of things that are real and they are
and exhausting.
And exhausted is emotional violence to your spirit. And so that's how I started trying to merge being a minister, being a corporate leader, because people are coming to the altar needing prayer for their jobs. Because if you think about it, our three most important relationships are with ourselves, with others, and with our jobs, our purpose. And so people will come in and they're like, I don't know if I can take it anymore. And so I realized after these women were coming, I think, you know what, something is here. And so I started doing social circles, sister circles, and merging the spiritual with the professional to help them tap into a different level of strength.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
That's really powerful. That merge, I can imagine how fruitful that is for not just the sisterhood, but, you know, that comfort that's there and taking away the, you know, you mentioned the shame that comes. And, you know, I've never seen good things come out of shame, but boy, do we have it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of shame with success that people don't talk about.
Yeah, you can use those two words in the same sentence.
Yeah, but it's sometimes there's a shame that you made it and others didn't. There's a shame of that you want to enjoy your money and live in a better house, but then people call you a sellout. There's a shame that the whole family depends on you to be the bank. And so you're feeling like even though you're doing so much better financially, the collective responsibility is a lot. So we don't think about that. You know, I have a lot of clients that talk about, you know, I'm grateful for the experience, but the price, not only in the corporate setting, but at my home, in my family, that's a lot to bear.
It's heavy. It's heavy. So, you know, so often we gain reward in our careers or in following our passions, which we hope to make our careers. And we have to be willing to take risk. Right. And this isn't always easy. And it kind of takes us to what we were speaking about with discomfort. What light can you shed for listeners on how to balance the idea of risk and reward?
Yeah, I think it's important first to say risk are normal. They're essential. Right.
We but have also, to normalize that.
We have to normalize it. And we have to say it's okay to be scared. Can we just say that? Yeah. You know, I think that we don't say that. We want people to think that we take these Herculean steps forward is scary. But I have a framework that helps me get balanced. And the first framework I ask myself is I try to get clarity. Is this really what I want to do? In other words, to say, is it worth the risk? Do I really want to do this? Am I called to it? Am I led to it? And am I equipped to do it? And it's all about knowing who you are and your gifts. So clarity is the first one. The second thing I ask myself is, am I willing to pay the cost? Because sometimes I want something, I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm willing to invest at that level with my time, talent, and my treasure. You got to be honest.
Yeah.
So that's the second thing, clarity, cost. The third thing I ask myself is community. Do I have support to do it? Because success never happens in isolation. Every dream needs a team. So I ask myself, do I have the team? Do I have the support? Do I have the resources? Do I have the expertise? And if I don't have it, where can I go get it? You know, so I make sure that I think about what do I have not only outside, but what do I already have inside of me? Because all of us have skills that we have never tapped or cultivated. So I try to think about what skills do I have and who do I know to help me get the best out of me to do what I've been called to do. The fourth thing is conditions. The fourth, and that means what are the settings where I thrive? And that's all about being clear. I think even when I started my business, I had to get clear of who I want to do. Am I willing to pay the cost? Do I have the community? And also, what are the conditions? And the conditions would be around people, environment. Another way to say is, how can I set myself up for success? I think sometimes we can do the right thing at the wrong time, or we can do the right thing with the wrong people, right? And then the fifth thing is just Christ. Everything, success is spiritual. So I'm always invoking God for direction and discernment. And also always invoking God, send me the right people. Because our egos want the people with the flash. Yeah, but I believe your purpose will pick your people. And so that's why I don't limit myself to who I work with. I always ask myself, what does my destiny need? Because I feel when we have vision, there's always provision. So I always ask myself, where is my provision? Because I know that if it's in my heart, if I have a desire to do it, that I have the skills to do it. And so those are the things. Yeah. And I make sure I go through the process all the time. And the clarity is important because I find so often we have been socialized to want things that we don't really want. We want things because it's
they
popular.
Look good. They sound good. Or it's the next step. But it's not your step.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that you just said that. I just had one of my clients and I write about it in my book. She's a doctor. Hates it. Hates it. And she never wanted to be a doctor, but her father was a doctor. Everybody's a doctor. So she went through, can you imagine, 12 years after college. And then after that, she quit. Now, the whole time she knew. But if you don't have clarity about what you want, it's hard to walk in courage. Courage and clarity go hand by hand. So if I'm clear about what I want, I can in some way muster up the courage to stand up for myself. But if I'm wavering, it's hard. It's hard to win when you're wavering. Winning and wavering don't go together. And so I think it's really, really important for people to go through that process to get clear. And I think it's important to go through that process and talk it through with someone else. There is counsel in the group of many. We know that. And that's how my being a preacher comes in. And I believe in that. I believe in collective wisdom. And I believe that we have blind spots that we cannot see. In the book, I have a chapter called You Need Another Set of Eyes to Rise. And because we can never see ourselves and we can never see our gifts because our gifts are normal to us. So sometimes we need other people to say, you know, you're really good at that. Because if not, we overlook our gifts and we don't develop the things that we're good at. And so we operate, you know, we operate based on our experience, our education, and not our calling. And if you're working your calling, you still can be good, but you won't be great. You can be doing a good thing, but not a God thing. And I think that's really, really different.
You know, as you say, the collective wisdom, I love the way you put that. And to me, I think I see it as an activation power, you know,
yes.
And I've never used the term collective wisdom. So I think I'm going to borrow that from you because I really love the way you say that. But that having the need to have another set of eyes to rise, the way you just said that. And it's difficult because some people, you know, there's sometimes this fear in sharing your ideas, whether it's a fear of judgment, fear of your idea being stolen, fear of whatever it is. But that collective wisdom is so important to activation, to getting you to your highest level.
Yeah. We cannot develop or grow in isolation. Now, I do want to say that it's important to have an incubator of friends, right? It's kind of like when you...
Not all friends are those incubators.
Not at all. Not incubator friends at all. See, I think that there are three different types of friends.
Yes.
I think you have your core. Those are your two or three people that you can be vulnerable and transparent, people who can tell you the truth, people who are already successful in their own right, so they're not telling you stuff from a place of envy or jealousy. So you have your inner core. Your inner core are people you do life with. Then you have your inner circle. Your inner circle are people who are your alliances and maybe you can work with. Those are people you do work with, right? And then you have what I call the crowd, people you do change with. So people you do life with, people you do work with, people you do change with. The problem is,
that's a brilliant way of putting it.
If we don't do our internal work,
you don't know which is who.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's where we have the problem. We're mistaking people who belong in the crowd and we think they're our core are people who belong in our inner circle, but not our core. And those things are so different. And that's why it's so important for us to do the emotional work. When you are not hungry, you can choose. It's kind of like when you go into the grocery store, they say never go to the grocery store when you're hungry because you get all the stuff that you don't need. Right? And that's what happens. But if you are so settled in who you are and know your value, you can wait till the right person comes. And the research shows that for women, if they have a partner, you can only have about 2-3 people max to be in your core, because the core is a covenant type of relationship. There, you need to have time. You need to have feedback. You have to have
that's
a level
investment.
Of trust.
You have to invest
yes.
in your core. Because
you have to invest. Yes.
You can't only be taking from your core, right? And so I think that's what people also have to remember is that these, and the way you said that, if you can just do 2 or 3 because of that, because it is an investment. Not only is the other person investing in you, but you're investing in them. And that, yes. that takes time and it takes care, and it isn't necessarily going to be a 5-minute job.
Not at all. And I just wrote about that in this book. And the reason being, my whole chapters are based on people I interact with. And the chapter's called Titles Take Time, because we want to slap on the friend title with everybody. Yes. Here's another thing we need to think about. It takes time to learn how to be a friend. We have to learn how to engage each other. We have to learn how to disagree without disconnecting.
Right.
And we don't know how to do that, you know?
That's a difficult thing.
It's a difficult thing. And so if we don't know how to disconnect or disagree without disconnecting, if we don't know how to give each other feedback, our relationships start to feel like prisons and not playgrounds. And so we have a lot of people who are in relationships where they become imprisoned by someone, because you have friends who want you to live like you, vote like you, love like you, you know, work like you. Yeah.
These are the
that's
boxes.
Not a friend. Yes. That's a prisoner. That's not a friend. So when we talk about people who can be in your core, a person has to be, has some intellectual horsepower, some spiritual maturity. They have to have some emotional stamina. They have had to do some therapy. We have to heal in a way to be able to be available to others. Mm-hmm. And if not, we will have relationships not based on reciprocity, but we become opportunists, right?
Yeah.
And you can feel that. That's an energy. I tell people, you know, don't bring just an appetite to the relationship table. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, bring your dish and I bring my dish, and then we have a buffet. But don't take, because what happens is it hurts us, one, but then it is compounded hurt. And as Black women, we deal with enough hurt in the world. Mm-hmm. If I have to fight society, I can't fight you.
You can't fight it in your circle.
Yeah.
You know? Or it takes on a whole other heaviness when
yes.
you're fighting it within your inner world as well.
Yeah, it's the woundedness. Yeah. And you can't win when you're wounded that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important. This is what women don't do a lot. When I have a friend, when I think someone is friend material, I have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have some sister girl rules. How are we going to do this friendship? Why? Because we're different people with different people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and different friends will pull out different things out of you.
Pull out different worlds.
Yeah. So let's have a talk about it. We do that when we get married. Like, how are we going to do this marriage?
Mm-hmm.
When you find a person who's worthy not worthy because of who they are, worthy because of their skill level.
Their skill, yeah.
Their development. We have a conversation like, you know what? And the conversation can be something like this. I really enjoy spending time with you. I am learning more about me. I'm learning about you. And I feel like when I'm around you, just the energy and your education is helping me be better. I would love for us to be really friends. What are your thoughts? Just have a conversation. And we don't want to do that.
We don't do that.
It makes us feel embarrassed. I feel like this. I don't want to be embarrassed. I want to be equipped. Mm-hmm. So if it means that I have to have a conversation with a person, because remember, so many people come from broken homes and broken relationships, mm-hmm. and we all have different standards of friendship. Now, if you come from an abusive relationship, that is not my brand of friendship. But if that's all you know, or if you come from other people who have claustrophobic friendships, they're going to bring that type of friendship. That's not going to work for me either, because I'm very introverted. Mm-hmm. So, but have a conversation so that you both have an understanding of how the relationship works. So many relationships fall apart because we're not talking. Nothing kills relationships more than silence. Just tell me what you need.
That's the truth.
You know, and tell me how I need to show up. And I tell my friends.
What you just said there.
Yeah.
Tell me how I need to show up.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to the expectation that the other person knows that they should know how to show up. Right.
And they don't know, you know, and as a leader, and I know that you know this as a leader, I'm finding that people don't really have basic communication skills, no conflict management skills. The problem is the more we talk and use the computer, we have great computer skills, but we lack we weaken our atrophy. Our communication skills.
And that clarity goes out the window.
Out the window. And so sometimes I remember talking to, you know, one of my friends, which we are no longer friends, because she could never identify her emotions. And I told her, listen, I want a friend, not a client. Now, I don't mind doing this all the time. See, I'm honest. See, I don't have time. I'm in my 50s. I don't have time for that. I have to, you know, crystal ball, pick the emotion. Now, if you don't know what it feels like, you can say it feels kind of like this and kind of like that. That's fine. But to tell me, you know, I don't know. I don't know either. But so I think there's a level of responsibility. If you want a good friend, prepare yourself for friendship. We don't prepare ourselves for friendship. We just think we can walk in like I am so wonderful. You're wonderful, but you're wounded. So take your wonderful, wounded self and get you some therapy, right?
Yeah.
Go get some therapy. It's okay. I've been in therapy most of my life because I know that I was going places that my culture, my society where I grew up could not support me. I'm the first in my family to do all the things I've done. Mm-hmm. And I knew that many people in my family resented me for it and envied me for it. So I'm thinking, I'm not going to ask you anything.
Yeah. And that's a lot to carry.
It's a lot to carry.
It's a lot to process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's important that we have to find a sister circle, a coach, a therapist, somebody who's ahead of you. Yeah. And ahead of you doesn't mean in promotion. Because when I think about when I first went into corporate America, you know who helped me? Those old ladies at the church who were domestics, who had to learn how to navigate in a white world, right? And they came and said, baby, let me tell you how you work this. Let me tell you how you say this. Let me tell you what you don't say. Let me tell you how to say stuff without making people feel threatened. These were women with no education, but they had experience. Mm-hmm. So who's ahead of you in a place that you need to be ahead of? And so interesting, all the stuff that I write about is based on those old wisdom that I got from women who were really not educated, who were one generation away from slavery, just one. And I learned so much from them.
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah. Powerful reminder. Now, one of the things, the aspects that drew me to you was the four words that you use. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm big on words. I'm big on words that people use. And the four words are educate, activate, elevate, and liberate. These are some powerful words. Why these words?
These are the words that are the building blocks to destiny.
Oh, yeah.
These are...
Mic drop.
Yeah, they're just building words. For example, educate. Educate is like, Discover who you are and who you are not. Discover your narrative. Discover what ideologies have suppressed you. Discover who your gifts. This whole education process, because we don't know who we are. So we have to learn and discover. So that's the first thing. Educate. Become educated about who you are in the life that you live and about your calling so that you can do your work and not someone else's. To educate. To activate is, how do I use the information and implement it? So when we talk about activated, it is all about how can I, what is the word? How can I lift and do? Mm-hmm. How can I take what I discovered and do something with it? So that's how can I activate? And activation is a full embodied experience. How can I activate my mind so I can have more knowledge? How can I activate my heart so I can love differently? How can I activate my soul so I can discern the spirit? How do I activate my body? Because success requires physical stamina. Those are all those types of things. How can I activate my resources? How can I activate my community? How can I mobilize so I can get things done? That's activation. Then the third way is elevate. Now, that means that after I educate and I'm doing something and I am doing it well, it's like, how can I scale it? So elevation is all about how can I leverage what I know and how can I multiply it? And so we talk about synergy because that is all about a collaboration. Because if you're connected to the right people and doing what you have been called to do, mm-hmm. 2 + 2 is not going to equal 4. It's going to equal 9.
Yeah.
So how can I elevate? How can I amplify and multiply all the skills and all the resources and all my knowing so I can do what I have been called to do, destiny? And the last one is liberate. Liberate to me is an act of love. Liberate is an act of development. Liberation says, I want to help you free yourself from every emotional, spiritual, religious, societal shackle that's holding you down and holding you back.
And as you said shackle, I was saying chain. So I was definitely.
Yeah. And liberation, yesterday I did a Facebook Live and I talk about liberation starts in the imagination. Mm-hmm. One of the chapters in my book, again, from an old wise woman, she used to say, baby, sometimes you see better with your eyes closed. And was so powerful because she taught me the power of imagination. And she just used to say, baby, when you don't like what you're looking at, close your eyes and ask God to show you something new. And so I always understood that in my I liberate myself in my imagination because when your imagination can roam, it's not confined or chained. But there's 4 different types of imagination, and I talked about that yesterday. One is prophetic imagination. That is, help me see what's possible for myself. That's prophetic. Mm-hmm. Then the spiritual imagination is, help me understand what God can do for me and to me, but also help me see what God can do through me and ask me. Spiritual imagination. That is liberatory imagination. That means, God, help me see myself without the shackles. I always tell my prayers, God, help me know what you had in mind when you made me. Help me know who you said I was before society said I wasn't. Mm-hmm. So that is liberatory imagination. And then it's collective imagination. God, what could I be if I could work with people who pray differently, love differently, ate differently, voted differently? And if you can get out of your imagination, out of your silos, you can understand people don't have to be kin to you or skin to you to win with you. So that's another way to think about it. But you have to get into that space.
Imagination space.
Imagination. So you can look outside of your culture, outside of your own societal paradigms, outside of your own religion. Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of imagination, and imagination takes courage.
Yeah.
And so that's why, if I can liberate you, help you get liberated, that's why these words are words to build destiny.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I know that you said it here, and through your work I've seen, is that you help people unwrap purpose. You help them get to what their purpose is. But clearly, you have to do this with yourself first, yeah. Right? Now, can you tell us about this? And was there ever a point when you felt that you had to figure out your purpose and then something came and shook it up. Like, did you see clearly what it was? Any plot or did any plot twist come along? I feel like, especially in this period, so many people are dealing with being shaken up.
Yeah.
This is what I thought my purpose was, or it is my purpose, but I can't get this done. You know, how do you deal with that knocking if the narrative has changed?
Sure. I believe the narrative might change because we become different versions of ourselves. In my case, I was always clear. Being, I was blessed. I had people affirm. This is what we don't understand. We learn our purpose young when we are witnessed, affirmed. And so I was witnessed and affirmed by my father and being the whole church. You know, they're like, girl, you're special. Or you're a good preacher. Or you're a good teacher. I had so much affirmation, but it felt natural. People thought I was mimicking my dad. But I remember teaching and preaching and saying things that is no way I could have known. I felt that I would, when I was doing something, I was floating. And people have, it is a feeling. And I didn't even realize it. I would just, when it was done, I'm like, and I needed to go to sleep. So I totally welcomed that spirit energy. Or whatever, that energy, right? So what happens is that, remember I said that we are socialized, pathologized out of our gifts. And that means that we have gifts and they're never affirmed. We grow up feeling inadequate, our abuse, our trauma, are feeling invisible. So that's the socialization. Are theologized. God said, people use the Bible, our religion, in the wrong way. And you think about religion, a lot of times has been used to support slavery and support patriarchy. Mm-hmm. So we know that theology used wrong can make you shrink because you see God as small versus God as the omnipotent one God orchestrating your life. And then I think pathologize. When we want more, and we are sometimes, I would say, shunned for it. I think in some of our families, if you have big goals, people think you all of that.
Who does she think she is?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so then you already get that a lot from society. If you don't, if you come in the wrong color, the wrong package, the wrong kind, right? The wrong click. And so I think we stop hearing our own voice. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have, sometimes people say, well, I had to change directions. No, you're always in the wrong direction. Right? Yeah. And what's really happening is you're getting re-anchored at coming home to yourself. Because sometimes when we are successful, we think that's what we're called to do. Mm-hmm. But success doesn't mean significance. And just because we're good at something, remember the gifts are still there. But sometimes mm-hmm. we're gifted and we're using our gifts in one way, but it was really made to use it in another way. Because remember, so our talents are transferable. So sometimes if you're multi-talented or you have never been witnessed or affirmed or you never had exposure, you pick what's close. I feel like when I think about how I even wanted to be a minister, I was looking around. I'm thinking, I don't want to do any of that, what y'all doing. So at some point I was going to quit because I didn't see anything that looked like something I would do. Because I knew I had to infuse justice and corporation and have a different narrative around money and success and fitness, you know. So I'm thinking, I don't see it. And sometimes I tell people to journal, ask themselves 4 questions. What excites you? What delights you? What fights you? That means that what you get mad at. And what ignites you? What gets you going? And then another question I asked them, what was fun when you were 5? Mm-hmm. Because what I do now was fun when I was 5. Awesome. I never not had fun. I mean, even when I would line my dials up and I was teaching to them. Mm-hmm. And people always say, well, you know what, Sharon, your father was doing it, but it was different. Even though we have examples, it doesn't mean that we are not in our anointing, for lack of a better word. That's a religious word to say equipped. Yeah. So, you know, and I think that is really, really important. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Those questions that you outlined and you suggest people journal, is that a good place for listeners to start if they're thinking about how to unwrap their purpose and they're not sure where to go?
I think those are very good questions, because I think we need to get back to the basics. I find that some people stay in their head and they want to, they lift up logic and rationale and facts and figures, but that's not what makes your heart sing. A purpose is a thing of the heart, is a thing of the spirit. So what feels right? We have been taught in our culture, which is very Eurocentric, and I keep pointing that out, to elevate facts over in logic, over feelings and intuition. What's really indigenous and African is the spirit and are the merging of the two. So I let my spirit lead my mind and not my mind lead my spirit. Because remember, a purpose is a faith walk, not a fact walk. Mm-hmm. So I have to ask myself, what do I feel led to do? Here's the faith. And then I always pray, God, help my faith have some feet so that I can start walking. And it's okay to be wrong. Let me just say that. Sometimes we will get it wrong, because learning how to discern the spirit takes time. So sometimes we're going to get it wrong. But guess what? That wrong move will still help you get to the right place. Because if you believe your steps are ordered, yes. So I believe my steps are ordered. That means my steps and my missteps are ordered. All the steps are ordered, right? The wrong ones.
We don't add that part, though. We say our steps are ordered. I like that. Our steps and our missteps are ordered. Yeah.
Yeah. And it helps you. And it takes out the judgment.
Yeah.
When you understand that you're on a journey. Journey back home to yourself.
Yeah.
That's the blessing.
Yeah. I love that. Journey back home to yourself. So on that, is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners with?
I would love the listeners to know that they are a treasure. They came to the world fully equipped with skills and talents and abilities and wisdom to be purposeful. You came to the world already armed for advancement. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember that, because the world will try to make you predictable, not purposeful. Yeah. The world will try to make you mediocre when our Creator wants us to be masterful. That's why you are a one-of-a-kind design. And so we have to hold on to that. The second thing I will want to say is that let your purpose pick your people. If we don't let our purpose pick our people, our ego and our hunger and our insecurity will. Mm-hmm. And those are not good pickers for us or for anybody.
Yeah.
The third thing I would say is to understand that you're always under construction and you always are being developed and being built up and broken down simultaneously. So, which means that you have to understand that you're going to have some wins and some wounds. Mm-hmm. And not let the wounds make you feel like you're not on the right path. I think we need to remember that we gain strength from our struggle, not from our successes. And sometimes before we go to the next level, we have to struggle. We have to hit some rock bottom so that we develop the muscles to not only to ascend to this level, but to keep soaring higher and higher. So I want to leave people with those three messages and to get those in their spirit. Because if you know that, you can always do what you were born to do and not settle for what society has taught or told you to do. And that's critical.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today, Sharon.
I'm so grateful for this opportunity. And I continue to pray for your success. Ministry and this message that so many people need.
Thank you for that. Now tell listeners, where can they find you?
Yes, everything is Sharon Jameson, on all social media. I have a blog. I would love them to read the blog. I put out articles every week. I'm sorry. I have a newsletter. So please get the newsletter. I have a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. But I have I have a program coming up called I Dare to Be Me. Ooh, awesome. It starts May 15th, and it is all about how to challenge the status quo. And it's hard to challenge the status quo by yourself, but in, I keep the group small, but in a group of women, we will learn sisterhood, we will learn who you are, we will learn the impact of our conditioning, and we will start rewriting and reimagining what we hope for this new season of our lives. So I would love for women to join me, and we have a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's love work, because you learn how to love yourself in ways that you've never loved yourself before.
Awesome. So listeners, I'll put all of that up on this week's show page. So if you'd like to find out how to connect with Sharon and find out more about the things that she's up to, you can visit www.yolandrobinson.com/episode45. Thank you for listening, and have an awesome week.